This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hail cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh, and Brandon, why am I here? What am I doing here?
I assumed you would have had a baby by now. Your life would have been changed forever, but no.
The things I once cared about, I no longer cared about.
But you're just on borrowed time right now, you were telling me. You're still waiting for the baby to come, and in the meantime, I'm putting you to work. I'm making you continue with your co-hosting duties and Always Cheating.
It's a weird thing. So my wife was due yesterday, and we're still waiting for the baby to come. And I came into the office, you know, today, and everyone was expecting me to be out for paternity leave. And I got a lot of strange looks. Sort of, why are you here? I basically wrapped up all of my work on Friday.
Was there an intern sitting at your desk using your computer?
No, they actually hired someone entirely new. Yeah, as far as they're concerned, I'm not an employee there any longer. So they found me a little like spot in the corner. I sat on the floor with an iPad and got my work done.
That's great.
But thank you. A ton of people have shouted out this week and said they'd be happy to host, and that was awesome. And you know, I'm not even really sure, to be honest, you know, how many times we'll need hosts. I mean, we have some friends of ours who live near us, who obviously are going to be taking on a lot of the responsibility. But, you know, just given that it's because I'm having a baby, it's going to be kind of unpredictable. I think there's probably going to be a lot of sort of windows of opportunity for people to contribute if they want to over the course of the year. And so you may, you know, much like the first scene in The Godfather, you may eventually get a call one day. a cryptic direct message from Brandon may arrive in your inbox.
Nobody wants – I mean, you suggested this might be a possibility, Josh, but I think everyone's worst nightmare is just an hour of me in an empty room talking about the merits of starting Heaton in goal and trying to talk myself into the Burnley defense.
I think that would be okay. I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I was, you know, really an online poker obsessive before the Unlawful Internet Gambling Act was passed about 5 years or so ago, maybe a little longer. And I used to listen to a million podcasts. It's like the early days of podcasts, and there would just be people talking to themselves for like 90 minutes about like hand histories and how they might have played something differently. And I was rapt. I loved it. So I think you actually could do it yourself if you have to.
Now you're just into the futures market, right? You only play the futures market.
That's right. It's all in trade.
Okay, Josh, I made up a song for you, and I would like to sing it for you right now.
Okay, let's hear it.
Guess who's back? Back again. Trollkaku's back. Tell a friend. He's back, baby.
I know. Thankfully, I didn't captain him. You had to at least be worried about this one.
Oh,
right?
I mean, yeah.
Away to Bournemouth.
Very worried. Lukaku was on such scorching form, and we saw him last season go, I think it was 7 games in a row scoring, and there was no sign of him stopping. But of course, even Ronald Koeman could not stop Everton from just reverting to being Everton for one game.
I have to admit, I didn't watch a minute of this game. I I sort of didn't watch in protest because I was so annoyed about the Leighton Baines injury that no one knew about. So I had like a little. I told you in advance I was going to go on a rant here. I'm not feeling as ranty anymore. But you know, wild carded this weekend and a lot of injuries. I somehow wild carded in a bunch of injured players, none of whom anybody predicted were going to be injured.
Right.
Thankfully, I avoided the Dejan Lovren transfer that I was considering, but I did have Luke Shaw and Leighton Baines. And so losing Shaw right at the start, I was kind of frustrated because I've been debating so many different players and I kind of stuck with Shaw and I was like, oh, I don't even know if I really want, you know, I don't even know if I really want like a Man U defender right now. Like it all seems to be going to hell. Damari Gray made me feel better about that move. But, you know, so my thinking was, and I sent out a kind of, I wouldn't say cryptic tweet, but it was a very, very, it was very cold, the tweet. Did you just roll your eyes at me?
No, I didn't roll my eyes at you. I was trying to remember this tweet.
Well, it was basically just, I mean, like, no one really knows what's going on inside these clubs. And that is in no way meant to, there are a lot of websites and Twitter feeds, and I'm not, certainly not going to name names, and I don't, and there's nothing wrong with these people are doing. I don't think most of them are faking or anything like that. And certainly not the more dependable ones, but you know, honestly, all these people are doing, and it's all they can do, really. You know, they don't have connections inside these clubs. They're not on the training ground. They're not even press, you know? So all they're doing is are taking these press conferences and kind of condensing them and then presenting them on Twitter, you know, well, or Facebook.
Didn't Lovren end up with a virus like that surfaced the morning of the match, and that's what kept him out of the starting 11? And who?
I mean, come on, that's what they always say. It's always something that manifests itself the morning of. It's like Leighton Baines, right? He picked up something the morning of. I mean, there was no hint of anything wrong with him.
Surely,
I mean,
oh, this, you this know, sort of thing.
I was
only,
reading
only
this hours before. Right.
If it's Daniel Sturridge, I believe it. But if it's a real hard body athlete, then right. No, it's harder to believe.
So I just think that a lot of people can spare themselves some mental energy and not take any of these proclamations too seriously about the supposed fitness. And I don't, you know, someone like Ben Dinnery, I mean, I'm really not trying to disparage him in any way. If anything, I feel bad for him because have you ever looked at his Twitter feed? I mean, that guy gets asked the same question 40 or 50 times in a row. I mean, no one will ever look at his feed to see if he's answered the question already. They ask him the same question he's been asked like 40 times in a row. That cannot be fun. And all he's doing is guessing. I mean, it's not like he's pretending that he's like, you know, calling up David Moyes on the phone to find out the status of, you know, Vida Manone for the next 8 weeks or whatever. You know, he doesn't know.
He's pretty good natured about the whole thing, too. We tweeted at him last season, just like, hey, Ben, enough of what the injuries. How are you doing? And he responded saying, well, thanks for asking. I'm doing quite fine. He has taken on quite a burden of servicing every fantasy manager on the planet, basically.
Right. But to paraphrase Marco Rubio, let's dispel with the fiction that any of us know what's going on inside these clubs. We don't.
Okay, so this leads us into Mitchell Maynard's question. He asks, what are your main sources of news, stats, or insights? I'm guessing it's quite broad, but I'm interested to hear which sources you guys consider most helpful and dependable.
I mean, it's not like groundbreaking stuff. I mean, I think that the I've always thought the Fantasy Football Scouts What the Fans Are Saying article is a particularly good article. It compresses a lot of things that fans are saying on team blogs.
Right.
And it tends to be a more reliable indicator of, you know, not necessarily even injuries, but just who's going to start and who's not going to start. It's really good at picking that sort of thing up. They'll often telegraph, oh, you know, Raheem, the talk is that Raheem Sterling is going to be, you know, sidelined. And a lot of this is because these guys read everything. Right. So it's like an Arsenal fan who's like the super fan, they're writing on this Arsenal blog. They've read like every local North London paper, blog, whatever, you know. So yeah. If there's any bit of information out there, they've picked it up and they're sharing it with their friends on these sites. So I think that, I think that's pretty useful. I mean, I like just actual websites. Like I think The Guardian and The Telegraph are really David Ornstein and The Telegraph is really good.
Here's a pro tip for you. Follow every Premier League team on Instagram, and throughout the week they will post pictures of training sessions. And I mean, this is a ludicrous suggestion, I accept. But at least you could see who's at training, who's got a smile on their face, who's goofing around with Alexis Sanchez.
That's
Maybe Cazorla mysteriously doesn't appear in any Instagram photos throughout the week. What's going on there? He's only appearing in pictures where they're visiting sick children in the hospital. Does that mean he's nursing an ankle injury?
Right, exactly. I think that the comment sections of even place, I mean, Fantasy Football Scout, I have to admit, I don't read the comment section as much as I used to, partially because there's just too many comments. I mean, every post gets, 1,200 comments like the second it's up. It's just a lot to wade through. But, especially in the hours before a match starts, it's just very, I actually had a theory when I woke up this morning. I was thinking, it's going to be hard for anyone born in the U.S. to ever actually finish number one in the world, because it is, I was up until 1 a.m. is reading everything I could, especially on the wild card. And, but there's, the game started at 7:30 here in the U.S., which means I would have to get up by about 6 a.m. in order to find any breaking news and make any last minute transfers. It happened a couple times in the spring of last year. And I just think that, there's a little, and I'm not complaining about this, it's fine, but I do think that I'm not going to win number one in the world anyway, right? But yeah. I do think that there's a lot of chances as a, it's even worse, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, right? You have to wake up at, you just stay up, I guess, right?
Exactly. It's like staying up for a late night international flight or something like that.
Exactly.
Like, oh, I'll sleep on the plane.
But the thought of waking up at 6, I mean, maybe
I'll sleep
with the
during
baby
the Burnley Watford match.
Exactly. I don't know. So what else? I mean, I think regular news sites, they're typically, I feel like they're good people to find on Twitter who really like plugged into the club. Those can be good sources for injury news in particular too.
And Ben Dinnery, also he and I think a couple of partners launched this new website, premierinjuries.com. And it looks like they also have an app for your iPad and your iPhone. But you go there and they do a team-by-team listing of who has knocks or injuries and little sound bites from press conferences, what the managers are saying. So that is a good one-shot, one-kill if you just go to premierinjuries.com.
For sure.
All right.
So those are some sites. Yeah, and we've talked before about just regular fantasy stuff. I think that I don't know. Is there a website that you go to for fantasy information that isn't one of the really well known ones? I mean, we talked about the Fantasy Football Scout, and both of us like the Transfer Hub website a lot, and the Transfer Hub Facebook group is great too. It's a private group, but you can typically get in if you email Nick, and so that's something to. I hope I'm not revealing any trade secrets here, but I know Nick's always trying to build his kind of. Readers on that site.
That pretty much covers it. We're going to look at various stats for a lot of premium midfielders coming up, particularly Arsenal and Liverpool. And I think sometimes you can get too much inside your head looking at all these stats and all these reports. I am all about the online forum of my mind, Josh. Sometimes it's not too bad. It's not so bad to just watch these games, do the eye test, go with your gut, and let that be your guide.
It's so much more fun that way too. I mean, I think that, I often wonder, I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that it's, I sometimes wonder if the podcast is in some ways affecting the decisions that I'm making, because I want to be making the right decisions, because I know I'll be talking about them on the podcast next week. And but making the right decisions just often means that you're making the decision that the majority agree is the right decision, which often is I'm like talking myself into circles here, but often there's a certain wisdom of crowds that you should trust, but that's also not the most fun approach. Right. It's more fun to take a little bit of information from A, B, C, D, and E, and then kind of come to your own conclusion, whatever that may be.
All right. Speaking of where our decisions actually take us, how did we do in game week 6?
I finished on 51 points. Pretty disappointing coming out of the wild card. I'm actually up like 100,000 spots overall, and I did win my head-to-head in the Showstoppers League. So I felt pretty. It was like the one bright spot this week was winning my head-to-head in the Showstoppers
League.
You won
on a 1-point victory because of a Hollabas yellow card.
Luke, yeah, I feel bad for Luke Maunders, Pinky and De Bruyne. Yep, I beat him 51-50 because Hollabas got 0 points in this afternoon's match.
Heartbreaking.
How about you, Brandon?
I finished with 65 points, and I was not on my wild card. I had to feel pretty good about that, considering my transfers were dropping the ne'er-do-wells on Chelsea, Hazard and Diego Costa, who just got decimated by Arsenal. And I bring in Aguero, of course, and because I couldn't afford a guy like Raheem Sterling, I took a punt on Adam Lallana. And, I mean, how fortunate was that? So in a week where I got nothing from my defense, Adam Lallana and Mesut Ozil and Sergio Aguero carried my team for 65 points. So
pretty extraordinary. I mean, that's a 40-point swing right there, you think about it, because you captain Aguero, right? So that's 26, mm-hmm. And then 14 from Lallana, and you would have had 15 points from Lallana. Oh, 15.
Yeah.
Wow, so 41. I don't know who you would have captained if you hadn't brought in Aguero. Maybe it would have been someone like Zlatan, but huge swing.
Yeah, probably. So, I mean, if listeners of the podcast will remember me getting on your case for bringing up Adam Lallana a few episodes ago, and
because he hadn't scored in 2 weeks.
Exactly. What have you done for me lately? And in truth, I regretted saying that like almost immediately, because, you know, back in his Southampton days, Lallana was just an amazing fantasy asset, and he's always had that potential. And I was pretty happy to bring him in, to be honest with you. And watching the way he performed in that Liverpool midfield, which we'll talk about in greater detail a little bit later, feeling good for the long-term prospects of him.
Whenever I think of Lallana, the mental image I have in my head is him clinging to Jurgen Klopp like a child who hasn't seen his father in like 2.5 years. Uh-huh. He's sort of dragging on Klopp's shoulders. He really must have hated Brendan Rodgers, because it was like he turned to him so fast. He needed a father.
FPL Dark Horse asks on Twitter, with Gray Band and Burnley scoring for fun, is Sam Vokes the new Brock Toon? Well, Dark Horse, sadly not. I started Vokes over Kapu this week, and though Burnley looked assured to get Vokes a goal, it was not meant to be. He almost Lukaku'd a goal. He could have pretended he scored the first goal that Burnley scored today, but he is not a jerk like Lukaku is, willing to steal goals off of his teammates. But I don't know. I guess Vokes gets a stay of execution, because now he's guaranteed starting up front, and he's still not good. And that team, despite a 2-0 victory over Watford, is not particularly good at all. But do we give Vokes a name?
Vokes. I can't believe we're even talking about Vokes. Like, it makes me like, the fact that we've talked about Vokes this much on the podcast is not a good sign for our podcast. Sam Vokes is not a very good player, and he should be out of your team very quickly.
How about we just reverse?
Injury or no? He actually looked pretty good in the first half of this match, I'll say, even though he was like on the ground. Just that thing where he was like bleeding from his thigh, like 30
that.
Minutes of the match. Yeah, he was. They roughed him up. They roughed him up bad.
I'll just propose this. Because of Volk sounds kind of like Volkswagen, maybe we should call Sam Vokes Farfig Nugan.
That's pretty good, actually. That's up there with Middlesbrugger. So, Brandon, the question that you should be asking me, but I'll just ask myself, is what would I have done differently during my wild card? And I'll tell you, I decide, you know, sometimes I the mistake that I can sometimes make is that I'm always trying to think in 3 or 4 week blocks instead of thinking in instead of just thinking for 1 week. You know, I'm always like, all right, I've got my, I don't want to think in terms of 1 week. I want to sort of plan things out and have a good plan in place. And that plan for me was having Zlatan Ibrahimovic for the Stoke match in game week 7. It was very important to me to have Zlatan for that match, especially because I planned to captain him during that match. And as a result of that, because I got so committed to the Ibra game week 7 plan, I ended up, you know, having this incredibly expensive forward line, and my midfield really suffered as a result. You know, I couldn't bring in KDB, who I kind of wanted to bring in. I couldn't bring in an Arsenal midfielder, and that was what really hurt me. I bet on the wrong Liverpool player. I don't feel too bad about Lallana, because he was not a player I was looking at. I was looking at Mane more than anyone else. Yeah. And Mane finished with 5 more points than Firmino, but certainly it was very frustrating that, you know, on Saturday morning to have 9 total goals in the Man U and Liverpool matches and have absolutely no attacking points from any of those.
The odds are incredible. That's basically the odds of surviving, like storming Omaha Beach. Like you're the guy that lived.
And we're, you know, we're going to talk in a few minutes about midfielders on Liverpool and Arsenal. And I mean, in terms of chances created, Firmino is far and away the leader in that category. I mean, it's very surprising that he wouldn't be, that he wouldn't be in the points at all. But that's, you know, that's okay. So I think
so
that
where do you go my from plan here?
My plan is to. I ideally won't make a transfer this week, and I'll stick with Ibra for the Stoke match, and then I'll save those two. Ibra turns into somebody, and then I make an upgrade on my midfield. So I don't know. I don't know what those moves will be yet. Probably an Arsenal midfielder. Maybe even Sanchez if I can afford him.
Yeah, Arsenal seems to be on the ascendancy this week. I mean, much like they were after they destroyed Watford, and we all know how that turned out. It was just two very dry, fallow game weeks with Arsenal. Who would have guessed that it was this Chelsea match that would have been Arsenal's next coming out party? But man, they look good against them.
You know what's interesting? Just to circle back real quick to Mitchell Maynard's question, you know, in terms of sources that I find very useful, I cannot believe how prescient the Stats Bomb people have been. I know I turned you on to the Stats Bomb podcast, and they don't actually even do a podcast that often. They were doing one like once a week during the transfers, but their assessments of these players and managers and teams has been like totally spot on. And I think the website is actually really good too. And I just remember, you know, when they were talking about that Chelsea team, they said, you know, I don't even think they're going to be in the Champions League this year. It's just all these problems that still had to be fixed. And when Chelsea started 3-0, you were like, clue they were off there. That's gelling. And now, you know, 3 weeks later, you sort of see all of these problems starting to come to the fore. I mean, they were crushed by Arsenal. I mean, I feel like Chelsea, even when Chelsea was down last year, they competed with Arsenal. It was a very, very surprising match.
Yeah, Gary Cahill is kind of that team in a nutshell, I think.
That whole team is just in need of a million. I mean, it's the same team that quit on their manager last year, you know, with Conte, you know, in for I don't even know. I mean, I guess he's sort of in for Sess right now, right? I mean, I know the formation's a little different.
I think Matic was kind of playing that role previously, and now Matic is maybe playing a little more of an attacking role, but I don't know. I'm just not really impressed with Matic's link play, and there's a vast landmass between that terrible defense, terrible aged defense, and their front line. They just can't seem to have a cohesive move back to front.
I have a question for you. I was going to save this for later in the podcast, but I'll just ask it because we're talking about it. If you owned Chelsea players, if you owned Hazard or Costa right now, I mean, their next match is away to Hull. You probably would hold those players, right? I mean, as bad as this match was, it would be rash to dump them ahead of this match.
I totally agree. Hazard, I would have a bigger problem with because we saw this last season when Hazard went off the boil. He just basically vanished from the face of the earth. Right. Costa looked incredibly hungry during the Arsenal game. It just so happened that he pissed Laurent Koscielny off so much last season that he showed up to just destroy Costa's game in its entirety. And it was just the most phenomenal defensive. Him and Mustafi looked so good. They squashed
Costa
him.
Costa didn't have Gabriel around to fool this year. I think that was helpful.
Yeah, no, the dim-witted Gabriel. But yeah, I would keep them. The only thing I would say to that is if you're triggering your wild card this week, and I'm trying to, I guess it's just for people who are trying to get Aguero in who waited an extra week. If you're triggering your wild card, I would dump the Chelsea assets. But I wouldn't go out of my way to get rid of Hazard or Costa, like you said, ahead of that whole match, because they could show up and put three or four past them easy.
I think so too. But I also think that I wouldn't be bringing Chelsea players in just for this fixture. That's for sure.
Oh God, no, no. I mean, we saw and you see that whole team how they performed against United. They stood so strong against the United team when they were sort of in their early season full flight. And they really stuck to their game plan, and I could see them nullifying Chelsea just as easily,
I'm sure there's Chelsea fans out there who know the answer to this, but I can't really. I'm looking at Batshuayi's minutes right now, and I'm a little shocked by how. In the entire season. All right, let me run through the total number of minutes that he's played for all six matches. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Six minutes. 18 minutes, 11 minutes, 3 minutes, 0 minutes, 20 minutes. All told, that is almost one half of football in the first six matches. I know he's young, but he's looked so good in extended run-ins, and I'm surprised that he's not getting more play. I mean, especially in that Swansea match, it seems like they really could have used him in that match. You know, they played 3 minutes there.
Conte seems to be a little bit out to lunch in terms of adapting this team to what they're facing in the league, and I think he's a famous defensive-minded manager from that Italian school, and he is trying to play a holistic defensive tech way with a bunch of players that don't want to play defense.
It's just an interesting thing. I mean, I guess I'm sure
so he may as well go all out attack and, like you're saying, bring in guys like Batshuayi and just go for it.
And I do think he'll figure it out eventually. I mean, I know last year with Juve, they started slowly, and then by the end of the season, they were totally rolling. So, I trust him to figure it out eventually. But I mean, you almost wonder if he's letting these players sort of play just to. They're all kind of getting one last shot before they all start getting dropped. I mean, there was some rumors that was why, Mourinho, played Wayne Rooney in that Man City match. And Rooney was so poor that it finally gave, it was so poor and it was in such a big spotlight that it finally gave him the excuse to drop Rooney. Right. Because everybody saw it. Everybody saw the way that he, totally clogged up that midfield. And, as a result, now Juan Mata is basically playing in Wayne Rooney's role. I mean, you can argue Pogba is, depending on which era of Rooney we're talking about here. But it's a completely different
Rooney.
But it's a completely different squad, right? I mean, they throw four goals down in the first half of that match.
Yeah, that's a little conspiratorial, if you ask me.
Maybe.
Anyway, we've got some business to take care of here real quick, Josh. We have to run through the top 10 of the Hail Cheaters Super League before we get on with the pod. So let's do that real quick. Give our loyal listeners their shout out. Number one, Never Fergie Me, Adam Lamb. He's in first place. And I believe
it's a new number one.
New number one. 67 points on the game week. Number two, Lads on Torre, Nick Forster's team. In number three, Tekker Slovakia. That's Adam Jacques' squad. In four, BTSTU, Mitch Maynard, our Photoshop king there on our Facebook page. And Spleep Splorb in number five, Gloria Prieto. She had 58 points on the week. Slightly disappointing, perhaps, if you're with what the numbers Gloria's been putting up since game week one.
Come on, Gloria. Pull it together.
Number six, the Cuddly Koalas, David Fellheim squad. He couldn't meet Gloria this time, though. 57 points on the game week. That's why you're in number six, David. Number seven, No Hit Wonders, Double Star. That's Dimitri Vanderreek's team. I wonder if he's any relation to Reek from Game of Thrones. Do you imagine?
I do. Yeah, I'm certain.
In eighth place, Catch Me If Coon Can. One of your favorite Tom Hanks movies, isn't that right?
That is right. You got it.
People often forget that Tom Hanks is in Catch Me If You Can. They
hand ready. He's wonderful.
Pitch it as a Leonardo DiCaprio movie. No, not so.
That is one of the most underrated Steven Spielberg movies. I would put that right up there in Steven Spielberg's top five.
Fantastic. It's one of those movies where if it's ever on TV, you're watching it.
All the way through.
Right up so there good. With Uncle Buck. Ninth place, Flying Without Mings, Oliver Monk's squad. He had 68 points on the week. And we have a tie for 10th place, Josh.
You know what's interesting here, though, Brandon, just to jump in. It looks like 9th and 10th are also tied. Why is Oliver Monk's in 9th place with 381? And
yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, strange.
I think it comes down to various tiebreakers. I think one of the tiebreakers is how many transfers you've made throughout the course of the season or on the week. Okay. So that might be what's separating 9 and our tie for 10th place. Suarez Fab, Victor Fabry's team. He is one of our 10th place finishers with the big score of 84 points. Now I was like, how did Victor go ahead and score 84 points? Well, here's a little tip for you. Get clean sheets. And our other number 10 finisher, Payet forward, Roger Greaves' team, and he survived the gauntlet with just 44 points. He did worse than you did, Josh.
Hey, I got 51. I have some green arrows. It could have been worse. I did Captain Aguero at least.
So well done to everyone who finishes in the top 10 this week in the Hail Cheaters Super League. As we tell you each and every week, you can still join our league. Just go to alwayscheating.com and click on the league tab. or on all of our social media pages. You've got the league code right there. So please join and have fun.
Oh, have fun. As much fun as you can. I'm trying to have more fun. After last week's podcast, the joy was gone a little bit. I tried to have some fun. Our friend of the podcast, actually, Trevor, a couple that is in our personal fantasy league, came over on Saturday morning. And
life we lead.
It was very actually. It's funny because we showed them all our. It was very domestic. We showed all our whole nursery, but they came over and we watched the matches. And Stephanie actually had written her new blog post on the Ephus. I can't remember the name of the. Do you remember what the name of it is? I feel like we should have.
It's
that.
Called Friday Night Plights. Yeah, right, and you can read Stephanie's column Friday Night Plights, which is all about making uninformed transfer decisions on Friday night. And you read that at EPHUSMag.com, EPHUS.
But I guess in this case, she actually woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, just like we were talking about earlier, actually. So she could do what I can't, but she also has a long commute in the morning, so she's used to it. Anyway, I had some fun this week. You know who didn't have fun? Our two meltdowns of the week. Number one, Trevor. One of the two people that was
like, I feel like you were going to make a point about them coming over and you having more fun.
Just that it's more fun when you have people to watch matches with and rant to. And when you're like, when you watch, like, at the very least, I like to keep up an active Twitter conversation. If it's just me by myself and I'm not even really posting on Twitter and I'm just watching the matches and I'm kind of feeling bad about myself because I've made bad mistakes with my team, then I'm like, this is really not worth it. Like, I could be like, it's like a, you know, especially like in the summer, you know, the matches start and it's August and it's like 84 and sunny outside and you've passed up like an invitation to go to Governor's Island for the day so you can watch, you know, week three fixtures.
Yeah.
That's when the game is less fun. But
I'm conjuring images of myself alone in my tiny New York apartment living room with no windows with a blanket over my head watching these games. My wife, Leela, walks through the room, says, "How are the games going?" And I say, "Not good." And then that's the end of the. Yeah, so I think it's important what you're saying, Josh, is to get out there and mix it up with some people, your fellow human beings. Have fun.
Yeah, go to a bar, even if you don't drink, go to a bar and have a cup of coffee or something. Get a nice English breakfast. All right, two meltdowns this week. Trevor Ingerson is actually over, and he had a tough week. He burned 4 points. He did bring in Aguero, and he made a move for Nacer Chadley, which really didn't pan out. We were kind of laughing about it before the podcast started, but yeah, it really was a reasonable move to make. I mean, Chadley had a huge numbers.
Two goals, then, two assists the previous week
before, and they're going to Stoke, who has been leaking goals all year. So, and then gave up a very bad goal at the end of that match. Trevor said, "This is on Twitter." Actually, says, "Does anybody in FPL have a good hammy right now?"
No, I think you have to go to Denny's 24-hour diner to get a good hammy. They have this wonderful meal deal called Moons Over My Hammy.
That's true.
My mouth
and
is
Shane Deere says, "I took a 20-point rage hit midway through the current game week. Is that even possible? A 20-point rage hit?"
I don't. Surely Shane's pulling our leg here.
I wonder if he is, but I think that you can if you have not played your wild card, and if you take like a 5-point minus 20 hit, but then you hit the play wild card button, I think the minus 20 then does. Does it erases itself?
Yes. So Shane, if you haven't already played your wild card, please, for the love of God, go trigger your wild card.
Yeah, there was a lot of rage transfers this week. A lot of frustration. I think the injuries took their toll, and there's some rotation. And I mean, the Lamella thing is very surprising. I really thought that. I thought by now he'd be back in the rotation. I'm surprised that he's come off the bench 3 weeks in a row. I guess
Son is just on fire right now, and I think that's contributing to it. And, Eriksen is doing his classic FPL thing where he's putting up incredible stats, but doesn't necessarily have a lot of FPL points to show for it.
I know. It's frustrating. All right, Brandon, let's take a quick break. And we have three topics we're going to discuss in this week's podcast, in addition to like the 12 we've already discussed. One is the first thing is an Arsenal-Liverpool midfield comparison. Second one is a clean sheet update / clean sheet discussion. And the third is a Q&A about should you drop the following disappointing players? If so, when should you drop them? Let's take a break first.
Okay.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
All right, Brandon, we're back. And the first topic I want to talk about is a lot of people owned KDB, and now he's injured for 4 weeks. We're going to be looking for a replacement for him. A lot of people want to get in on the Arsenal bandwagon, and they want to get in on the Liverpool bandwagon because those teams are showing a lot of strength in the midfield, a lot of goals, a lot of assists are coming through that midfield. And so we thought instead of covering everybody, which is just too much to talk about, we pooled together the Opta stats on Arsenal and Liverpool midfielders. And so we want to do a quick Arsenal-Liverpool midfield comparison. We actually have a couple questions here as well. But let's talk first. So I went in and I pulled just a few different stats for the key midfielders on Arsenal-Liverpool. I pulled assists, big chances created, successful crosses, goal attempts, goals, shots on target, and touches in the final third. And looking at this data, I think there are two players that really jump out to me. One is Philippe Coutinho, and the other one is Alexis Sanchez.
Surprise, surprise. Though the biggest number here I see is Roberto Firmino. 19 chances created, and that is at least 7 higher than the closest player, Ozil and Coutinho, only with 12 chances created. So, but this is the only area in which Firmino tops the charts.
It's true. I suppose I wish I would have pulled this data before. Now, granted, everything's a little skewed because Sanchez had a goal and assist in the last match. Coutinho had what, a goal and 2 assists in the match, something like that.
I think it was just 1 goal and 1 assist.
One goal and 1 assist, right? The assist. And actually, I'm not even sure if Opta counts the assist because it was the handball. You know, it's a little. Anyway, let's, you know. Actually, I think they do because it's called. They call it fantasy stats. So it's sort of a slightly different thing.
Right.
In terms of big chances, the leader in that category is a little surprising to me. It's actually Theo Walcott. And I've been thinking a lot about Walcott the last couple of days. You know, Walcott did. Well, just, you know. Part of it is I do think the longer you play this game, the more bias sets in. And, you know, we know, I mean, it's sort of like the way that everyone was jumping on the Ross Barkley bandwagon, you know, the first week or two of the season. And you and I were sort of laughing about it, like, well, you can't bring in Ross Barkley because he has 2 weeks on and then it's like 10 weeks off, you know, and it's sort of.
Yeah, guess who I'm stuck with right now.
but you knew it was a bad decision when you were making it.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But Theo Walcott is a player who, you know, I don't know how long it's going to last because I do think that when Aaron Ramsey is back and healthy, I think there's some competition for that spot. But Walcott's delivering right now. I mean, the most big chances created, scored 3 goals in the season already. He's actually he's in second. So we pulled it's actually 10 players total. It's 4 players from Arsenal and 6 from Liverpool. Shows how strong Liverpool are. There are actually 6 players who are worthy of talking about here. But he, of these 10 players that we pulled, he's actually second in total goal attempts, which is a little surprising to me, actually, a little higher than I would have expected.
Walcott has to be on the table right now, 7.5 million. He's the same price as Cazorla. Right. Actually, so Cazorla is a little more expensive, but Walcott, recency bias, looks like such a better buy than Cazorla right now. He was so active up front against Chelsea, and even if Ramsey comes back, he's not going to take that spot right away. Right now, Theo Walcott is working hard enough and getting the results to keep that starting berth until his stats start to wane, and they might not.
He's always been a great player. It's just he's never really been able to. Right before, remember when he got injured in the FA Cup and the 2-0 Arsenal win over Spurs?
Yes.
Remember that? And he held up the 2-0. And that was when that happened. That was right when he was playing the best he ever played in his career. It was really bad luck. Really, you know, poor. So anyway, he's second in shots. He's number one in terms of these players we pulled in terms of shots on target. He has 3 more shots on target than Coutinho and Sanchez, who are tied for second. I think that, you know, it's interesting actually because I'm thinking about making a midfield transfer for this game week, and you know, Walcott may be a really interesting option. I mean, Arsenal has a great run of fixtures coming up. He's really undervalued at 7.5. Not undervalued given his performance last year. 7.5 was probably a fair price. I mean, you know, for some reason, only Daniel Sturridge gets priced based on what they think he might be able to do at his best. Daniel Sturridge is always 10 million more for reasons we don't really understand.
Right.
But at 7.5, I think you're right. I think he's kind of a steal. Who else stands out to you? Who jumps out to you in this?
Well, I was curious to see what the stats were going to be for Iwobi, because he seems to be hitting a bit of a bandwagon stride right now. He's really cheap, 5.8 million, but you would have guessed he's low man on every single one of these stats, save assists. And
he hasn't played enough minutes. I guess that's part of the problem.
Yeah, he's weirdly integral to that Arsenal attack, but also invisible at the same time. Maybe he's just less flashy than guys like Ozil, but I am not tempted by Iwobi at all. And I think if anyone's on the bubble, if rotation starts to happen with Arsenal, it would probably be Iwobi.
Yeah.
But then Lallana. Lallana is the big ticket guy right now. He's coming off of a massive game week, and these numbers don't really recommend him. I guess goal attempts, he's pretty high up with 15, and it looks like, the average on these goal attempts is probably right around, like, somewhere between 15 and
12 to 15, yeah.
But Lallana is still a guy where I would say the eye test, just watching him this whole season, he's just weirdly in the eye of that Liverpool offensive storm.
Yeah. Let me throw a number out to you that surprised me a little bit. Touches in the final third, James Milner is actually third in this category, which surprised me a little bit, because Milner is, I believe, has been playing as a left back at least since game week 2,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So for him to be third in touches in the final third means he's certainly rampaging, yeah, left back. He's certainly getting forward a lot. And he's on penalties. And you know, given the crackdown on fouls in the box this year, especially on corners, at 6.5 million, he's really not a bad option. I hadn't really even considered him until he picked up two goals in this match. But if he's going to be this involved, and he also he actually is tied for second in chances created. Firmino is at the top, and then Ozil, Coutinho, and Milner are all tied with 12 chances created each.
Crazy that James Milner rates as high as Ozil, Mesut Ozil, for chances created.
Yeah. It's very surprising.
Annoying thing about Milner is, as you said, he's playing a defensive role, but he's not going to get any clean sheet points. Like he's sort of that rampaging wing back where you want to be getting a clean sheet and an assist from him and coming away with like 12 to 15 points.
Yeah.
But it's still at 6.5. If you're looking, like, say I need to downgrade Ross Barkley to do something with my defense, James Milner definitely would be in the conversation.
Absolutely. And maybe over someone like Iwobi, especially now when you're comparing the stats like this. I guess if we were talking about just straight, sort of just overall points, like regardless of money, Alexis Sanchez is certainly the winner in this category. I think, he's right. He's up there in every single one of the categories. He's, second in big chances. He's, third in goal attempts. He's first in terms of total goals. He's third in shots. He's second in shots on target. He's second in total in terms of touches in the final third. So it's not that he's necessarily the top in any of these categories, but he's at the top in every single category.
Right.
So he is absolutely integral to that offense. And, as long as they continue to not play a striker or play him as a striker, he's incredible value. And it's just that price tag is just something you have to decide if you can handle, but if I'm about to downgrade Zlatan to someone like Charlie Austin, who, yeah, I mean, their fixtures aren't great right now, but let's just say long term, I move to someone like him, that frees up 5 million. And with the way that Etienne Capoue's price keeps rising every game week, yeah, exactly. I think he's up to what, 5.1 or 5.2 already.
Yeah.
Or you can turn, some 6 million midfielder into Sanchez. So I do think I think you can certainly do your, build your team around a Sanchez, Aguero pivot.
All these Coutinho numbers just show me if he actually could stay healthy and played regularly, he would be priced at 10.5, he'd be Eden Hazard.
I wish that
incredible, yeah. But he is always a rotation threat. So this, I think it was like what we were saying about Raheem Sterling last week. Coutinho, if you're thinking about investing in him, go for it. There will be weeks where he only comes in for 15 minutes where he doesn't play, but he will put in those performances on a bi-game week basis that justify right. you having him in your team.
Totally agree. I've got a couple questions here. El Magico says, for $16 million, would you rather have Sanchez and a sub $5 million defender or Ozil and Bellerin?
Ozil and Bellerin. I mean, maybe because I have Ozil and he is starting to, I feel like he, even when Arsenal hasn't looked at their best in the last few game weeks, Ozil still seems to be playing well.
Yeah. I think the key consideration here is that the Arsenal defense looks like a defense that's capable of keeping clean sheets.
Yeah.
And they're one of the only defenses capable of keeping a clean sheet. So yeah. I think that's what really tilts it more than anything else.
They completely suffocated Chelsea. And if they keep that up, yeah, you're going to get so many points off Bellerin. And that sprint that Bellerin had to catch, it was Pedro. Just came out of nowhere to tackle Pedro when he's in on goal. And a guy in that kind of form with that kind of pace just like reminded me of how awesome Bellerin is. All right, next question comes from Dave Wegner Lodahl, I assume this is.
Yep, and he was comparing Coutinho and Lallana. And he said he feels like Coutinho is the safe option, maybe the better option. But then again, he has 30% ownership compared to Lallana's 11%.
What if Lallana's girlfriend was named Alana?
Lallana. That was pretty good. I didn't laugh, but I did appreciate that was not terrible.
You don't have to congratulate me every time I make a good joke on the podcast.
I should. I feel bad when I don't laugh, and so I feel like I have to say something.
Leave that to the listener.
It just depends on how your team's constructed, I think. Coutinho is not that much more expensive. And given what we've just looked at with these numbers, it absolutely seems to me like Coutinho is worth the extra million.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It also comes down to how you like to play the game. Lallana looks very safe and secure in that starting 11. Coutinho is a much more, I mean, this is why you like Coutinho, because he's much more explosive. But because of that, he needs to be protected in Klopp's system. Yep. And Lallana, Klopp clearly loves him, and he's ready to start him game week in, game week out. So if you're a nervous manager and you get kind of scared about playing time, maybe it'll be more fun to have Lallana in your team because he'll get more minutes and he'll be a little more involved on a regular basis. That would be the case I would make for Lallana.
Okay. Yeah. I think that, I hear what you're saying. I think that I tend to be a slightly riskier player, and so I think I'd be okay with the anxiety that owning Coutinho would inspire.
Yeah, let's be clear. History would tell you that Coutinho is going to produce on a more regular, on a more reliable basis than Lallana.
Yeah. He's streakier he's like an amped up Ross Barkley. You know, I mean, he's both players will give you goals and assists and huge like chunks of time. It's just that when Coutinho does it, he can get like 15 points for 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Barry Johnson asks on Twitter, how many Liverpool midfielders is too many Liverpool midfielders?
I love this question. I think two is not too many. Maybe even three. I mean, they've got a really good run of fixtures coming up. Let's look at their fixtures for the next few weeks. Swansea away, which is a great fixture. Man United at home, okay. West Brom at home, good fixture. Crystal Palace away, good fixture. Watford home, good fixture. I mean, four of their next five fixtures are very strong. And the Man United one, I wouldn't be scared of either because, we've seen the way they've attacked teams like Arsenal and Chelsea already. I mean, they're going to put it on the front foot.
So there are two other teams I would consider doubling up on the midfield. It would be Arsenal, which you kind of can't. Well, I feel like if you double up with Arsenal, you'd want Sanchez to be one of those. And then it sort of becomes a real price inefficiency.
Yeah, it's like $20 million. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other is Manchester City, where it's similar price issues, but also with City, there's so much rotation and the points get spread around and I don't quite know how to explain it, but the point distribution in that City midfield is a little more chaotic than I think it is in Arsenal or Liverpool. It seems much more sort of a team midfield where there's an more even distribution of points. I mean, you have Firmino, even though he didn't get on the scorer or assist sheet this past game week, you're still feeling fantastic having Firmino going into that Swansea game.
I guess. I mean, I think if KDB were healthy, you could certainly make an argument that KDB and Raheem Sterling are a very strong two-person combination. But I get your larger point. Mm-hmm. So, a lot to think about here. I think that, who would we avoid of this group? Based solely on the numbers, I guess the players we wouldn't really consider would be Cazorla, Mane, honestly, probably Firmino, unless you ignore the chances created.
Yeah.
So
it's strange. I'm just so shocked that Mane's stats don't compete with the rest of these guys because he looks so good. But there you have it.
All right. Point number two of three. We're moving very swiftly in this podcast, Brennan. I like it.
Blowing my hair back.
I want to talk about clean sheets here. Continuing the update that we've been doing the last several weeks in the podcast. And I know a lot of other people are doing this as well. I'd like to think that we were first. And if we weren't first, at the very least, we came to the idea to do this independently of anybody else.
We did it best, Josh.
So clean sheets, are they down this year? They continue to be down this year. We had two less in the last two seasons. Through what would be 120 total opportunities for clean sheets, we only have 25 this year, which is a 21% clean sheet rate. That is 12% lower than last year, which was 33%, and 8% lower than the year before. So, I mean, through 6 weeks, we're seeing a very dramatic drop, and for all the reasons we've already talked about, but it's just interesting to see it continue to happen. So Scott Gill says, in protest, the scarce clean sheets, we just give up on fielding anyone over 5 million in our defense and put the money elsewhere.
Scott has a good point, and there are lots of players to spend money on in the attack and in the midfield. But still, I think this is where a guy like Bellerin becomes that much more valuable, particularly if Arsenal starts hitting a run of clean sheets. That's 6.5 million that is probably going to be some of the best spent money in your entire squad. So maybe the way you rationalize is you get one. You limit yourself to one premium defender. Like right now I have Luke Shaw and I have Kyle Walker. Now, I guess you could argue how premium either of those guys are, but they're both at least 5.5, and that might be too much money to be spending on these guys where I'm going to end up with 1 or 2 points from them or zero from Luke Shaw.
Yeah.
Week on week. It's crazy, these outliers in game week 2 and 3, 7 clean sheets, 5 clean sheets. Elsewhere, it's 2, 3, 4, 4, just like totally dismal.
It's shocking. Well, you have De Gea, too, who might as well count as a premium defender.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's a strange thing what's happening right now with Man U and their clean sheets. I mean, the Man City match was one thing. I mean, I think that we all thought it was going to be tough to keep a clean sheet there. But, Watford and Leicester, I mean, that is not encouraging. So for all the talk about how, like, the one guaranteed clean sheet was Man United, I mean, we've only seen 2 out of the first 6 matches. And, you could argue that the Demarai Gray goal was a kind of a fluky goal, but he had the space to create it.
Yeah, Juan Mata was just standing there doing nothing.
Yeah.
And he needed to move into that space and shut him down. But it was a worldie of a shot.
Jeff Petter just says, where are all the clean sheets? The answer is, we don't know. Lazaro says, who's your favorite sheep nailed on defender? Asking for a George friend. His name may be Holobas. Discuss.
Well, this question was clearly sent to us before Holobas ended up getting a zero against Burnley. I guess that probably will end up being a bit of a fluke result for Watford, but additionally... We were kind of talking before we started recording how insane it was, the flurry of Watford discussion that happened at the end of last week. Everyone on their wild card saying to their team, they're like, should I get Deeney and Ighalo?
And Holobas, it was amazing to watch Holobas emerge as a candidate. Like, who was even talking about Holobas before game week 6? I don't remember anybody talking about Holobas.
No, I was all Prattle all the way, Josh. You know this.
You love Bassi Prattle. You always have.
I'm a sucker for a silly old top knot.
my favorite cheap nailed on defender. Well, I guess there's a little bit of bias here, but you know, I did bring in Trevor Francis. My only clean sheet this week came from Bournemouth, and this is actually not the match I expected to get the clean sheet from him. It was you know, home to Everton, but they played well. They're looking a little better. I like Bournemouth. I was happy they won. I mean, the fantasy thing was kind of annoying because I was certainly expecting points from Lukaku in this match, but it kind of worked out okay in the end because I got the clean sheet from Francis, and he's available for 4.9. They've kept clean sheets in two of the last three fixtures. Did I say 4.9? He's 4.5.
Right.
Clean sheets in two of the last three fixtures, and now they're about to play Watford away, Hull at home. They have Spurs at home, which is a tough fixture, but then they have Middlesbrough away, Sunderland at home, Stoke away. I see possibly maybe three clean sheets in those six matches. So, you know, I think he's a pretty valuable option at 4.5.
And the Bournemouth defense from last season was just incredible. Charlie Daniels hasn't really gotten off the mark yet this season, but every single one of those guys in the back line last season, he at least came up with a few goals, a few assists, and they're bargains.
It's always hard to know which one to pick. I mean, Adam Smith is only available. He's only 0.1 more. He's at 4.6, and he has a goal and an assist on the season. You know, I haven't looked at all the underlying stats for the Bournemouth the defenders, so I can't say that one is clearly better than the other. I mean, we know that Daniels is on pens, or at least he was last year. I don't know if I've had a penalty yet this year, but he has no goals or no assists this season. I think in terms of bonus points, it's all kind of a wash as well. So. I mean, is there a single Bournemouth defender that you'd pick out of this?
I mean, Simon Francis I had last season, and he performed well for me. I haven't watched enough Bournemouth to actually speak intelligently about it. So I would just say whoever's cheapest.
Yeah, that's why I picked Francis. What about you? You have a favorite 4.5 million?
I find this to be kind of an impossible question to answer. I mean. It's a leading question because I do think George Friend is a fantastic pickup. The way he has performed for that squad, he does seem to be the engine for that team. And when Middlesbrough needs somebody to get fired up, he will get fired up. In that Everton game, there was a period in like the 85th minute where a friend just started chasing the ball around wherever it went because he just wanted to do something to lift his team up. And he's there putting in great crosses. And I do think he's a great pick. I do want to take this.
The only concern there is, you know, there are no clean sheets yet this season for Middlesbrough. And actually, no, that's true. They have one, which is away to West Brom. Friend didn't play in that match. Ben Gibson did, however. He did score this last game week.
That's why I find this like an impossible question to answer, because you're asking about the cheap clean sheets when there are no clean sheets. So I really don't know. I mean, Gareth McCauley for West Brom is probably he's up to 4.8 now, I think, because people are so gung ho about that West Brom defense for a while. I think they'll do the Pulis thing and start picking up clean sheets again. So I think if you're ready to invest in West Brom, do it now before they get priced out of your team.
Yeah, Johnny Evans also at 4.5 on that team. I think, you know, I brought in Kone my wild card for kind of the reasons you were just talking about. I mean, I don't see a lot of great clean sheets in that 4.5 million range, but he's capable of scoring the occasional goal. And so that's like, if you have a defender who can score at least a little bit, it's almost like getting two extra clean sheets or a couple extra clean sheets on the season. So I think that, I mean, anyone with a little bit of attacking threat, I mean, that's why Daniels is so valuable. But unfortunately, Daniels is, I guess he's only 4.9. So it's not insane. It's not going to price you out too much.
These are all long-term investments too. I think, it's weird that we're seeing so few clean sheets right now, but don't you think like at some point the whole cities are of this league are going to exhaust themselves and we will start seeing more clean sheets? And I want to take a moment to sing a song of praise for Virgil van Dijk. I don't understand why any of the top four teams haven't come in for this guy. He is just so massive, incredible.
Totally agree. I mean, he has been so good the last couple of weeks. I love Van Dijk too. I totally agree. I mean, it's a fantasy versus reality thing. He's actually the fourth rated, or the fourth highest scoring defender on that Southampton team right now with 16 points. But those numbers in no way belie how good of a defender he is.
So maybe it's, maybe it's a good time to invest in Virgil van Dijk then, because the price has dropped to 5.4. So,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't really have a lot to back that up. I'm just sort of going, yeah, back, to the, I mean, going back to your beloved futures market, Josh.
The problem is they play Leicester, Man City, and Chelsea in three of the next four matches. And then Hull two matches after that. So it's just four, really. By the way, I think the Premier League does need to start, or the FPL site needs to start updating these fixture difficulty rankings, because right now Southampton's home match to Liverpool in game week 12 is rated a 3 out of 5. And to me, I would almost call that a 5 right now. I mean, given the way that Liverpool played on the road this season. So, yeah.
Defense, it's perplexing. I predict that we'll revert back to the mean at some point, and we won't be having this conversation for much longer.
Yeah, I think you're right. Good prediction. And yeah, I'm actually kicking myself for not bringing in Fraser Forrester with my wild card. I talking about a consistent. Well, I guess it's the same reason we talked about it. Fixtures getting worse right now. But
yeah. So who are your goalkeepers right now? This is gonna be something interesting to talk about. You made a bit of a maverick move with your goalkeeper.
I did. It was like one of the few maverick moves I made. I knew. So Loris Karius, you know, the news broke on Friday that he had he'd won his spot. He's considered a world class goalkeeper, kind of a young keeper on the rise, and his price had dropped to 4.9, and I just love the upcoming fixtures for Liverpool. I mean, for weeks and weeks and weeks, they're very good. And but it just really came back to bite me, because Hull had literally one scoring. I mean, I don't know about literally, but they, as far as I can remember, they had exactly one corner kick in the entire match, and they scored on that one kick. Totally ridiculous goal, a bad clearance. And it immediately reminded me why you shouldn't be investing in Liverpool defenders. And that was after the red card too, so it was even more frustrating.
Right, you probably thought you were home and clear when Hull went down to 10 men.
I never allow myself to think that way when it comes to defender clean sheet points, because something stupid like this happens. I mean, this is like you with the Leicester match, right?
Gray goal goes in.
Yeah, but I mean, Vardy and Mahrez get dropped at halftime, and it's 4-0, and you know they have the Champions League matches like 2 days later, and so you're like, all right, they're just kind of like punting on this match, and the Gray goal was such a fluky, you know, so you never know.
Yeah, you've just seen it happen so many times. I have the superstition where I won't. I try. I don't always stick to the superstition, but I try to not refresh my points after the 60th minute to prematurely load clean sheet points, because I feel like if I prematurely load those clean sheet points and look at them on my team's page, they'll be taken away from me.
Totally. Third point. Should you drop the following disappointing players? If so, when should you drop them? This is sort of we'll have a couple questions of this, but I feel like just the chatter that I'm seeing on Twitter and Facebook is a lot of there's a lot of panic about certain players, certain very expensive players that have been performing. In some cases, it seems a little over the top. I mean, you see someone like Dimitri Payet, who, you know, scored 9 points and 10 points in game weeks 4 and 5, and they have good fixtures coming up. And you know, he blanks in one tough match. I mean, Southampton were inspired in that match; they played great. That to me doesn't mean that Dimitri Payet is suddenly a bad option. I mean, he's a great option, especially at 9.4. It's a good price. And even if they decide get a little tighter defensively, they're still going to run the whole attack through him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not feeling as good about Payet as you are, because that West Ham team looks so awful right now, and they're letting in so many goals. You feel like that. I mean, I do think that if the pressure on Bilic is to tighten up that defense, that it is going to impact Payet. He can't do it all on his own. He can't do it all on his own with a guy like Zaha, who does not look entirely equipped to be a striker in the Premier League just yet.
But what can they do when all of their – so many of their defenders are injured right now? I mean You know, I think they're on their third string left back right now, or right. What is Cresswell play? Is he left or right back? I can't remember.
He's on the left.
He's on the left. So what you're saying? Cresswell and his replacement they have to outscore teams, I think.
Right. Until they go with the Brendan Rodgers tactic of just outscoring their opponent. I mean, it makes sense. I can see it happen.
Yeah, I mean, a coach would never say that, right? You can never go out there and say we don't care about our defense, or we're not going to worry about tightening it up. But right. I don't think that. You know, a bunch of 1-0 wins are really in the offing for them right now.
I mean, what is Pyatt's, what is his ownership right now? Like, I feel like there's been, everyone kind of got screwed because he went on that 2-game week run of getting those assists. And I think a lot of people brought him in. And that,
still pretty low. He's at 13.6%. And he has, so far he has no goals this season. He has 4 assists and, that was two games with back-to-back assists. And, I had one bonus point and 2 bonus points in those 2 matches. So
here's a slight,
they keep climbing, but it's still not that high. I mean, he's still, owned by, less than 15% is always, that to me is a differential, less than 15.
A slight unknown about Pyatt. So last season, West Ham was just, they played great for pretty much the entire season, and Pyatt was integral to that. And it was pretty much positive vibes all around. Last season in Upton Park, flying high, qualifying for the Europa League. I'm curious to see how Pyatt reacts in a team that is in disarray and is not playing well. Is he going to be the type of player that steps up and tries to carry this team on his back, or is he going to get frustrated and become withdrawn? I think you could start to see a few cracks in this game against Southampton. Yeah. So,
I'm sure they're frustrated, but he's a mature player. I mean, was he 29? He's got a man's body, as we all know.
Yep. He's a real man. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not totally losing my faith in Pyatt, but I am wary of him as an FPL player right now.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. So we talked about Pyatt. He was actually at the bottom of the list, but we'll jump back up to the top. Player at the top is Zlatan Ibrahimovic, 4 goals and 1 assist in the season. His price has been dropping, not from where it was at the start, but I think he's down to maybe 11.7 now.
Yeah, currently he's putting up Farfignugan numbers, so it's not good.
Well, he's not getting bonus points, and at his price, you need something approaching Aguero numbers, right?
Yeah, right.
At 11.5, given that there are a lot of scoring options in that 7, 8, 9 million range. So next six, it's at Stoke at home, game week 6, and then I don't know. It's a mixed bag, actually. Yeah. I mean, Burnley home and Swansea away in game weeks, I guess that'd be 10 and 11 are both pretty good fixtures. But Liverpool away,
hard to predict.
Chelsea away, hard to predict. Arsenal at home, not a great fixture. Mm-hmm. Kind of seems like the kind of player who might do well in those kinds of fixtures, though. I wonder if he might step it up a little bit in a big match like that.
So Ibra's not doing himself any favors. He's got that sort of Mesut Ozil disease where when he's not playing well, his body language really looks sluggish and disinterested. And I think a lot of people are responding. I am responding to it as well. He doesn't look like he's sprinting for the team a lot. And when he gets frustrated, he has that demeanor of somebody who is not going to do anything for you.
Yeah, yeah.
All that said, I'm going to keep him for the undetermined future. I have no plans to get rid of him.
I would think about getting rid of him after game week 6. If he blanks in game week 6, I really would think about getting rid of him because that would be just – it'd be one too many blanks against poor opponents. And mm-hmm. Even if he's able to pick up a goal here and there, away to Liverpool, away to Chelsea, it's not like this guy's a bonus point machine so far in the season. So, yeah, I think that – I shouldn't say that because he's actually picked up 6 bonus points, picked up 3 bonus points twice now, I believe. But, it's a little worrying. At that price, it's we're not getting the return that we expected. Especially with Marcus Rashford doing great for several million cheaper.
So – for me to get rid of Ibra, it would take 2 moves because I am fairly – I don't feel restricted in my midfield at the moment. I mean, KDB being injured really helps me there. Who I really need to upgrade is Sam Vokes, Farfignugan. So if I get rid of Ibra, it would be to upgrade my front line. So I think what you do with Ibra largely depends on where you're hurting in your team and –
right. Like
if you've got that full throttle front line, Lukaku, Brock Toon, and Ibra, like you do,
yeah,
it's probably a little more urgent for you.
Yeah, perhaps. So, who are you looking at bringing in for Vokes? I mean, how much money do you have in your bank?
I have 0.9 in my bank right now. So, I mean, that's Troy Deeney money right there. And
that's exactly who I was thinking.
I don't know if I'm ready to bring in Troy Deeney right now, the way my team is.
The great Brazilian Troy Deeney.
Yeah. Known by one name across all the land, Troy Deeney. The way my team is set up for game week 7 right now is I'm benching Vokes and I'm playing 5 in the midfield. And with Vokes being playing up front alone right now with Gray's absence, that's good enough for me to at least put him on the bench. I don't feel like I'd be getting any more with Troy Deeney than I am with Vokes at the moment. I mean, that's me sort of trying to make myself feel a little bit better. But yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I need to sell Ibra to get a little bit more money in the bank to turn Vokes into somebody a little more quality, like say Christian Benteke, or even if Lukaku gets back into the goals, I'd want to look into getting him.
Watford have a good run of fixtures coming up, so I don't think that Deeney is a bad option at all. I mean, that to me is the clear move. In fact, but. I mean, let's look at their next run of fixtures. I mean, they're home to Bournemouth, away to Middlesbrough, away to Swansea, home to Hull in the next four.
Yeah.
And pretty solid.
I mean, I was this close to turning Vokes into Deeney for a -4 going into this week, but I really wanted to see how he played up front without Andre Gray. And
yeah, the Gray suspension actually helped you in that case.
It does, yeah. I mean, it keeps Vokes, it keeps him valuable at least. I mean, am I the only person in FPL that owns this guy right now?
One of like four.
Okay, I see that Vokes is not one of the guys that you have listed here for. Do you drop? How long? Mm-hmm. How long do you hold on? Who's next?
Eden Hazard, 2 goals, 1 assist. I don't think we need to belabor Hazard too much because we talked about it at the top of the podcast. Next six, the next couple at least, we'll list our Hull away. Then they play Leicester at home, Man United at home, Southampton away in the next four. So after Hull away, it's not a great run of fixtures. I mean, Leicester doesn't look as good this year, but it's still not a great fixture for them. Man U is not a great fixture. Southampton away is definitely not a good fixture, especially if their defense is playing the way it played against West Ham. So I think that Hazard to me is a drop after game week 6.
Yes, absolutely. Agreed.
All right, let's just move on.
I mean, Costa is the one attacker on that team that I think you want to have at the moment, if you haven't.
Yeah, the price is better. Leicester defenders. Interesting situation with the Leicester defenders. They have 2 clean sheets on the season. They're kind of expensive.
Yeah.
You know, I wish if they were a little cheaper, it'd be easier to hold on to these guys. Their next run of 6 fixtures is actually not too bad. There are a couple of tough away matches here, but you could start a Leicester, especially if you had someone like Fuchs. I'd be happy to start him at home to Southampton. Away to Chelsea, not great, but then it's Crystal Palace at home, Spurs away. The way that Leicester's fixtures have worked out the entire season, they have alternated one good fixture, one bad fixture. Like for the first 10 weeks, first 12 weeks,
right.
Every single time they have a good fixture, it's followed by a tough fixture afterwards.
Yeah, I don't know why you would have a Leicester defender right now. How did you get yourself into the situation? Drop, hey,
you had,
sell.
Didn't you have Morgan at the beginning of the season?
I did. I dropped him after the first week, right before he scored a goal.
What about Man City defenders? One clean sheet and there's been some rotation.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, Stones has screwed everybody, but he still has the point in favor that he his price is right if he continues to start for that team. And you'd think they're going to get a run of clean sheets at some point.
Yeah, one clean sheet. They give away one dumb goal in every match, it seems like. And
the way they're playing back there, Bravo and Stones doing their little tiki taka, they're going to have a mistake in them every game. It's ridiculous.
I felt like, I mean, Swansea could have scored 2 or 3 goals in that match, and they were kind of unlucky to lose it, to be honest. That match could have been at the very end, they wore Swansea down. The last, like, 20 minutes was they were destroying them. But the first 70, Swansea really, you know, really played pretty tough.
I hope Llorente really enjoyed that one goal that he's going to score this season.
Hey, I think that was the second goal of the season, wasn't it? Oh, it was an assist in game week 1. Yeah. Maybe it was an assist. Yeah. Leroy Furr, Ross Barkley. What do you
dropped.
Think, Brandon?
Well, he had
that's like the Beastie Boys song.
Let the Barkley drop. He had a couple of decent chances in that Bournemouth game. Got on the end of a few crosses, but he's still doing his Barkley thing. Yep. I feel like you could spend that money a lot in much better ways.
I think he's getting dangerously close to coming off the bench for a few fixtures.
Yeah, Barkley has not been a part of anything good for that team since the first game week.
Yeah. Eric Lamella, one goal, one assist, started really hot, went away to Argentina for the qualifiers, and then he kind of got welly pipped with Son being his Luke Garrick. He came back. Son has scored four goals in the last three matches. I mean, what can he do?
He is out there like he's playing just for fun with his friends. It's incredible. Yeah. He just dribbles all around the 18 box and scores a goal and.
He plays a lot of joy. It was kind of annoying last year when he played with so much joy because he was so bad at scoring and finishing. But he's a really he's a player that's easy to root for, I have to say.
Yeah, I agree. Lamella was our everybody's dark horse to start the season, and it looked like he was going to finally come good.
Yeah, it's not happening though.
Yeah, maybe Lamella gets rotated a lot because of the Champions League. I don't see where he fits into the squad. At the moment.
Yeah, maybe in Eriksen's spot if Eriksen can't achieve any consistency. I don't know. It's Lamella is clearly not a player you want in your squad right now, though. It's just it's too risky.
This is a broader, more interesting question to me. What to do with that Spurs team? The Spurs team's playing really well, but there are a lot of different, Harry Kane is injured. Are you at all tempted by Jansen, or are you tempted to bring Son in?
I'm not really tempted by either player, to be honest. I know how much. Son, I guess a little bit, just because he has played the last three fixtures and he's in good form. But they've got the Champions League at midweek this week, and I don't know. I'm a little nervous about how consistent he's going to be long term, if he's going to start every game week, and Jansen. I just haven't been blown away with his finishing. I think that I know he finally picked up an assist in this game week, but
there was the strong scent of Soldado coming from Jansen.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like he's more. He's got a little more Depe than Pele at this point, but it's a little too early to tell, I guess. But I mean, their next fixtures, they're playing Man City, which is not a great fixture for them. And Aguero always scores five when he plays Spurs, so it's not looking good.
What if the tables turn and it's Son scoring five against Manchester City? Oh, I would love that.
That would be amazing, Brandon. We got through it. That was fast.
My God. Yeah, that was the record time.
Let's take a quick break. We'll do a very fast little 5-minute look at game week 7 and then let's wrap things up.
Okay. Same old podcast,
always cheating. All right, Brandon, game week 7. It's coming up with another Friday fixture. We'll see if I'm at work or where I am, if I'm still I don't even if I'm still alive, it's all everything's in play right now.
An asteroid could just come from outer space and obliterate this entire planet. You never know.
It's on the table. Transfer dealings. Do you have any of your moon? Excuse me. Transfer dealings. Do you have your move in mind for this week?
I do. I've got three players in particular that are on the bubble right now. It's Ross Barkley, Ashley Williams, and Luke Shaw. So. I'm thinking very strongly about turning Luke Shaw into an Arsenal defender because right now I'm doubled up on Man United defense for, a reason that seemed to make sense to me a few weeks ago. And now it's particularly with Arsenal looking like they did against Chelsea. I think I need to diversify a little bit. So in all likelihood, I turn Luke Shaw into an Arsenal defender. Otherwise, Barkley has to turn into somebody a little more interesting.
Okay, interesting. And Vokes is not even on the table. I like it. You're sticking with Vokes.
Absolutely. My art project continues. Hashtag Vokes for Vokes.
I'm planning to not make a transfer, but that depends on what happens with Leighton Baines and Luke Shaw. If one or both of them is – and, for Baines, it might be a quick turnaround. Komen said in a press conference afterwards that he wasn't ready for the Bournemouth match. He might be ready for Friday. So I'll probably be cutting that one down to the wire. If so, I think, like you, it's an easy move for me. I would be – I'd be making a move for an Arsenal defender, probably Koscielny. possibly Mustafi now is actually one of the cheapest options on that team. Monreal, I think, is also an option. This is also, but you know, we also have Champions League on Tuesday and Wednesday, so it's definitely a game week to wait until those matches are over, because you never know what's going to happen.
Shout out to Kieran Gibbs for being a heroic substitution against Chelsea. He's kind of a sad story in that he's been a great servant to Arsenal, and
just, I know, just not quite good enough. Yeah. Clean sheet picks. Last week I picked Sunderland. That worked out horribly. they kept it for a good long while, though. I think all of the goals in that match were scored in all the goals for Crystal Palace, I think they were scored in like the 65th minute or later, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you were keeping an eye on that match.
I was keeping an eye on it just to see if you got your bad Kone clean sheet. And also, we're both Jordan Pickford owners now, warming our bench. And I'm curious to see how he does week to week. He managed to not get any save points this week. So that was one surprise of the great appeals of Jordan Pickford, is he would just be a shot stopper.
Yeah, well, we'd seen that in earlier weeks.
Yeah.
Who's your clean sheet pick? My clean sheet pick this week is Man United at home to Stoke. So I know that you're looking at getting rid of Man United defender, which I do understand. But I think that's a pretty good – I think they get back on track and get a clean sheet in that match.
Yeah, I picked Watford this week, and we all know how that turned out. Playing at Turf Moor did not work out in Watford's favor. So I'm going to take the easier option for Game Week 7, and I'm going to pick Arsenal. Though they're away from home, they're playing Burnley, who will probably find it difficult to score against Arsenal.
Okay, good pick. Captain picks. I just mentioned, Brock Toon scoring 5 goals every time he plays Spurs. It's not every time, but it seems like it's most times. But I'll go a slightly Maverick pick here, even though his ownership is still like 30%. And I will pick Ibrahimovic at home to Stoke. I just think that you can't keep a 6'5" martial art loving 35-year-old striker down for long. And I think that he comes good in this match.
Do you think maybe to help his game that the FA would allow Ibra to play with some sort of Karate Kid headband? I feel like that might help, like, center his chi and make him feel a little cooler.
Yeah, I wonder if they let players wear like, what about a cap, like a baseball cap, like to keep the sun out? Can you imagine if a bunch of players could run around in baseball caps?
Goalkeepers can wear baseball caps.
That's true.
Keep the sun out of their eyes.
Was it the Swansea backup keeper? He used to wear a baseball cap.
Yeah, he wore two caps on top of each other, one to protect the back of his neck and one to keep the sun out of his eyes.
All right, so I see you've got Brock Toon for your captain pick. I don't mean to step on you here, but if you couldn't pick him, who would you pick for this game week?
Yeah, I mean, Brock Toon, just legend against Spurs. It's hard to go against that.
Let's say he gets injured in the Champions League at midweek.
Well, hey.
Always in play.
I do agree that Ibra stands a pretty good chance to produce something against Stoke, particularly because they're at Old Trafford. Maybe I go with Alexis Sanchez or even Mesut Ozil. I would love to see Mesut Ozil keep his form up. I mean, Arsenal look good. I still like City either any way you slice it against Spurs. Their first season for a while being back in the Champions League. And, you know, that's a pretty ambitious schedule. I'm curious to see how Leicester deals with Southampton coming off of another Champions League fixture. It's like high mental energy to go and compete in the Champions League. So I just feel City's going to be ready for that match. So, yeah, if it's not Brock Toon, another City player, or somebody from Arsenal.
Okay.
I'm kind of shying away from United at the moment.
Yeah, that's I can understand that. It's hard to know where the goals are coming from, if nothing else. I mean, I know they scored 4 at home to Leicester. That's it.
That's it.
How's that for a transition?
Go have a baby already. Come on.
Yeah, seriously. So we'll see. I don't think you'll see me next week, but we'll see. Brandon, where can people find us?
People can subscribe to the Always Cheating podcast. Find us on iTunes, where if you like what you hear, please leave us a review. That helps us a lot. Even if you just like hit the 5-star, you don't have to write anything. Just leave us a review on iTunes. Of course, you can follow us on SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, or on Google Play, Acast, TuneIn, which is this cool streaming service, TuneIn.com. And you can follow us on social media at Hail Cheaters, where you can get live updates on the ongoing saga that is Josh's personal life. And find us on Facebook, Always Cheating, and send us an email. Why don't you? HailCheaters@gmail.com.
That's it. Hashtag Hail Cheaters. Hashtag Embakani forever. Hashtag have mercy.
All right, Josh. I'll be back next week. We'll see what's happening with you. Good luck to everyone in Game Week 7.
Ciao. You can cut the ciao at the end there.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.